to have brought a lot of kids with you.
Yes, sir. Dr. Bergford, it's a pleasure to be here tonight. Do you want me to turn and talk to Dan?
You can sit on the list where thank you, Mass.
So, tonight has been a very, very prolonged but exciting time for us. We have had the opportunity to kind of organize our fall and participate in quite a few things. And man, what growth we've had. And we have had a lot of success. I think that it's something that we bring all the way down to the kid level. And I'll tell you, these guys have put forth a tremendous amount of effort and work. You know, and I'll say this, and with the times we've had and all of the things that we've had to go through to get to where we are, there's been a lot of times where discouragement has been on a lot of people's minds. And I will tell you, there's a crew that sits in here tonight, and a few that couldn't make it, that I will say that discouragement in our eyes was never seen. And that's something for those kids and those parents, those family members, and for all of us to be proud of. I want to start by recognizing our East Montgomery County Fair successes. This list is rather long, so we will go through it one at a time. When your name is called, I would like for you to come up here. We'll start with all the Grand Champion animals. Grand Champion Steer, Garrett Jones. Grand Lamb. You'll hold your applause to the end of this lap. This is a really long one. Grand Lamb, Ryder Lyric. Grand Goat, Abigail Moran. Grand Rabbit, Jersey Dean. Grand Candy, Dakota Spall. Reserve Lamb, Caden Watson. Reserve Goat, Brooke Seal. Reserve Rabbits, Judson Dean. Grand Pie, Zaley Overall. We'll move into third place with Swine, Melanie Rawls. Third Lamb, Lindsay Sessom. Third Goat, Ryder Lyra. Grand Bread, Kelsey Ness. Fourth Swine, Riley Jeffcoat. Fourth Lamb, Elizabeth Farrell. Fourth Goat, Dakota Spall. Fourth Rabbit, Ashley Ferguson Pippin. Fourth Broiler, Macy Braddock. Grand Canned Goods, Kelsey Ness. Fifth Overall Steer, Zaley Overall. Fifth Swine, Emma Crane. Fifth Lamb, Kai Eisenberger. Fifth Rabbit, Jonathan Pippin. Grand Handicraft, Wade Wells. Sixth Steer, Nick Brown. Sixth Swine, Kristen Poffenbarger. Sixth Lamb, Carter Barrett. Sixth Goat, Tanner Adams. Sixth Rabbit, Brielle Dean. And the Grand Horticulture, also Garrett Jones. Seventh Goat, Macy Morris. Seventh Rabbit, Emily Ferguson Pippin. Seventh Broiler, Cody Goss. Eighth Swine, Carter Green. Eighth Lamb, Jane Sessom. Grand Cake, Riley Jeffcoat. Ninth Steer, Lance Sessom. Ninth Swine, Logan Mueller. Ninth Lamb, Macy Morris. Ninth Rabbit, Chloe Welch. Tenth Steer, Hunter Johnson. Tenth Swine, Katie Moran. Tenth Lamb, Emily Ferguson. Tenth Goat, Carly Jackson. 11th Steer, Zachary Seal. 11th Lamb, Allie Wells. Reserve Champion Candy, Macy Brass. 12th Steer, Casey Kitchen. 12th Goat, also Cody Goss. 13th Steer, Aaron Harris. And I would like to also point out that Aaron Harris received her FFA jacket for going to the Live by Johnny at the local Kubota dealer and fully reciting the creed. She has that with her tonight. 13th Swine, McKenna Corsi. 13th Lamb, Parker Lane. 13th Goat, Aubrey Howard. Reserve Bread, Christine Kelly. 14th Goat, Carter Barracks. 15th Swine, Reagan Winner. 15th Lamb, Brooke Seal. 15th Goat, Hunter Johnson. Reserve Handicraft, Riley Adams. 16th Swine, Brooklyn Ross. 17th, Reserve Cookie, Adeline Overall. 20th Swine, Adeline Overall. 22nd Swine, Aaron Harris. 23rd, Lindsay Sessom. 25th Swine, Elizabeth Farrell. 26th, Wade Wells. 33rd Swine, Lance Sessom. 35th Swine, Zach Mueller. 36th Swine, Justin Gibson. 37th Swine, Justin Kelly. 38th Mason Cepeda. 41st Swine, Jonathan Pippen. 43rd Swine, Kristen Kelly. And finally, 45th Swine, Caitlin Fry. All of those exhibitors made the premium sale in East Montgomery County in those orders. I'm sorry that was a long line, but I do want to point out that that is extremely hard to do for these kiddos, and we are unbelievably proud of what they have accomplished, and we look forward to pushing that even farther. Let's give them some.
I know, we're good. Started shaking hands when I walked by.
Do you guys hang tight for just a second? As they're being seated, the other spotlight items that we have on our agenda to talk about is the Dallas State Fair of Texas. So most of you know that Dallas had kind of some rearrangement of things, and this was the first stock show since COVID when we had the opportunity to get our program out and showcase at a statewide level. And we had a tremendous amount of success there with a couple of individuals. Third place premium sale qualifying goat, and first time to ever make the premium sale, Ms. Dakota Spa. And our champion lightweight division medium wool, Brooke Seal. And last but not least, to round out our recognition evening, we will talk about our LDE teams that participated just this past week. The three teams that I will announce were teams that both bannered and advanced to area. Receiving first place in job interview in the Blackland District was Logan Brown. Second place in PR would be the team of Lee Wells, Brooke Seal, Dakota Spa, and Riley Adams. In third place, and also advancing to area, will be Carly Jackson, Aubrey Howard, and Brielle Dean for Agriculture Adams. These three teams will participate in competition in bowling this coming Saturday with hopes to advance the state contest. So, if you see them, give them a tremendous amount of encouragement for the rest of the week. We look forward to getting out there and trying to compete to advance the state.
And bowling is a town, not an event, right?
Correct. Bowling is a town, not an event. And I want to make sure that we all know, guys, if you want to come up, all of my teaching crew. None of this could have been possible without all of these guys together. We are incredibly, incredibly proud as a program and as a chapter. I want to let them introduce themselves to everyone who's here. You'll just go down the line and introduce yourself one at a time.
Hi, I'm Corey Long. I teach floral design.
To follow that, I'm one of the members of the welding courses.
Call and listen. I'm over for things.
Shannon Watson, I'm over the bedside program.
Tyler Spelling, I'm over the junior high.
With all of us together, like I said earlier, it's been a trying and challenging year, and we want to thank you guys. We want to thank you for believing in us. We want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to take these kids and push them to the next level, because there's a lot of other programs right now that are struggling to see that light, and these kiddos have done nothing but push. And with you guys backing us, there's nothing that we can't do, and we're going to continue to push and try to hit that next mark. So we greatly appreciate you guys, and thank you for everything you've done for us.
Mr. Taylor and all of our coaches and teachers and all of our kids and families, thank you guys for representing Splendora ISD with class and honor. It was awesome to see how well we did at the East Montgomery County Fair and how much success we continue to have. I know how much this program is a part of our community, and I'm just really, really proud and honored to work in a district that put so much emphasis and faith in this. And so thank you guys so much. We're really, really proud of you. Appreciate it.
I just want to, one, thank you for all your teachers and sponsors, but also a big thank you to our parents. A big part of why these programs are important to us, for years we've talked about more than a score. We talked about developing soft skills, work ethic. These programs are well beyond the classroom. The best way for kids to learn, we know, is project-based learning. And each of these kids, what they're here representing is a project that they have taken ownership of. And another big part in education, what makes education key, and it's be careful when you look at some of these state scores about this school versus that school, because what's the real success for kids is when parents are engaged in the kids' education. And this program gives a tremendous amount of opportunity for parents to be truly engaged and deeply engaged with their students. So just hats off to all of you. Thank you for being engaged with your students, for pushing them, and for you know, letting them go after these projects and really enjoy themselves. So, thank you all.
Start time, just for the band. comments to the board, unless the participant requires the use of translator, which case participation goes to the secretary. The board will only consider complaints that remain unresolved if being addressed in proper administrative channels and when they have been placed in the agenda. Please let the board of trustees show a deliberate response and make a decision regarding any subject that is not included on the agenda that is posted. Further information on these requirements, contact KPC Superintendent 316-894-441. Request tonight. Moving right along. Presentation, Entergy.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to come speak. My name is Mark Fowler, and I am here representing Entergy Texas, specifically their energy efficiency program, commercial solutions in the program that that the district will fall under. The district's been a good partner. We're very enthused to see participation and engagement grow. And so I'm here to present on a new program that's new to the district. We were invited to participate as a cohort member to the Continuous Energy Improvement Program within offered by Entergy Texas. I actually work for a company called Clear Result. We specialize in energy efficiency. We work with utilities and cities and businesses throughout the nation and actually in Canada as well. So we're a program implementer to assist Entergy, sort of, you know, feet on the ground, so to speak, to help the district improve its use of energy and reduce overall consumption. So at the end of the presentation, there's a check, golf check to celebrate some incentives that were paid out to the district this year for the new elementary school. So we'll finish with that, but I'll start off real quick with just a brief overview of the CEI program. So continuous energy improvement is a long-term approach to energy efficiency that includes setting goals, tracking progress, and reporting results. It's very information-intensive, data-intensive program. We're part of bringing Splendor into the program allows us to do benchmarking for all of the facilities within the district and help the district develop an energy master plan with the overall goal to reduce energy consumption per capita, per square foot throughout the program, throughout the term of the program. But then it's actually a three-year program. At the end of the three-year program, we feel that the district will have the tools and the knowledge necessary to continue to build on the progress that we make over this time. So, as I said, it's a cohort program whereby we have business members and school districts. Sam Houston State was a prior participant in this program as well. It's open to a wide range of customers. Generally speaking, it's typically larger energy usage customers. It offers collaborative group workshops within that cohort, one-on-one coaching, and the technical and engineering services. The technical engineering services is going to be your benchmarking, your energy master plan. It allows the district to see its energy consumption in a way that maybe it's not seeing it already and start to address higher usage facilities and put a plan together to, over time, reduce the energy consumption to basically put more dollars into education versus energy consumption. So Core Heart, it's a group of businesses that have agreed to participate, share learnings, best practices, their data to allow us to basically put these plans together for all the participants. There's an energy team that's set up. Eric Reamer is going to be the lead with the district within this program. So he'll be our point person. He'll help facilitate the data that needs to be collected in order to put the plans together. And then we ask, on behalf of the district, we ask for his commitment to basically deliver on the data requirements and the engagement that we need in order for this to be successful for the district. Go ahead.
So
So then this is basically getting, we asked them for commitment of staff resources. We have that in place right now. We'll conduct an energy scan. We'll participate in workshops and site-specific activities such as walkthroughs and essentially it's opportunities for us to walk the facilities, get a sense of what is here, and start making recommendations on how to make improvements, whether it be by building automation, by scheduling, by just systems that are in place. What can we do to keep moving the needle towards lower energy consumption and higher efficiency? These are just steps within the program. These are one-on-one on-site activities. They can be performed remotely. You know, with COVID, that is an option. Although we do prefer to be on-site to actually get a physical sense of the facilities. But we'll do site review opportunity assessment, energy scans. Mid-year, we'll come back with some recommendations and results from this work we do earlier in the year. And then we will form energy management assessment system. We're going to watch the facilities, the districts, the meters, see how they're performing and how we can help Eric to manage the energy consumption within the district. This is just a sample of the calendar of the activities that we will engage in throughout the process. So there'll be monthly calls with the cohort for participants. We'll develop modeling, energy usage modeling. We'll train. We'll provide any assistance and support that we can to give the district as much opportunity, as much of the knowledge base required or needed, requested in order to make sure that this is a success. And then this is the end goal. This is a chart of energy consumption. The red line is what is the predicted energy usage based on historical trends. And the blue line is where you start to see the departure from the projected and historical data to the lower energy savings. So this represents, I don't know, two and a half years of energy consumption for our facility. So we'll basically build this for the district as we go through this process. The benefits of participation is to identify and implement energy savings opportunities. You guys are already doing a really good job of that. I see a lot of LED lighting. The new elementary school is amazing. It's one of the, I visit a lot of elementary school or schools in general in my role, and I was really impressed. The design of that one, I'm very, very impressed with it. I think just the layout of it is very, very student teacher friendly. So I commend you on that. You guys did a wonderful job with that. But there's LED lighting everywhere in there, right? High super efficient lighting, low maintenance lighting. That's going to help the district. You know, in addition, we will help to lower energy costs, provide background and support to effectively provide more efficient operations. Predictive analytics, that's essentially the data piece of it. We like to engage the employees. We'd like to see not just the energy manager, but the district-wide. People get on board and be excited about the opportunity to lower your overall cost of operation to provide more funding for student teaching. So sustainable business process improvements and positive PR opportunities for the company. So, Entergy likes to make it known that these programs are out there, especially when we have big successes. They're really good about making that known in the community and engaging other customers to take advantage of different programs that are out there. And this is the check presentation. So we just completed two projects at the elementary school at Timberlakes, and we incentivized the district for high efficiency lighting, which was the bulk of the incentive, but there was also dollars that were earned for high efficiency heating and cooling. So the chillers were high efficient. Essentially, the way we determine the incentives that are eventually ultimately paid by the utility is by net improvement over code minimum. So the lighting at the new school was ex- exceptional. Really good, good lighting. A lot of it. It's a good size facility. Same with the chillers. You guys did not install, you know, just the base model, you know, code minimums that you're required to install. You installed higher efficiency units, which are going to pay off dividends over time. So I'm here to present this check to celebrate the incentives that have been paid. I don't know if they'll receive them yet. I think maybe this month they'll be paid out. But to celebrate the incentives that were earned by this investment, which is, again, continue to pay the district off in dividends year after year after year. Next slide, I think. So these programs calculated a total energy savings of 63 kW with 191,000 kWh per year. The energy savings, that's actually the incentive amount, the $13,144. That's the incentive that that Entergy is paying to the district for participating in the program, for providing us the plans, the submittals, allowing us to do the calculation required to document the project, which at that point we get to pay incentives out. Savings are actually a little higher. I think that was a mistake in this. So that's 1 year. It's the equivalent of 16,000 gallons of gasoline taken off the road in the carbon reduction from these energy savings. So it's pretty significant.
Can I ask a question right there?
Yes, please.
Like, on future plans, can you help us calculate what that incentive would be?
Absolutely.
Before we make that change?
Absolutely.
Where we need to
replace them? We can do it in cars and houses. And there's a lot of different ways to present that data to you. Gallons of gasoline speaks to people, right? We fill in our cars constantly. So Splendora's participated since 2009. There was a kind of 5-year hiatus between 15 and 20 where we didn't incentivize projects with the school district. We have a partner in the school district now that is very excited. We're very excited to have him because he's great about responding to data requests or any communications that we have going forward. So we feel like this is a new starting point for the program. We've already talked about the expansion at the high school. You guys are adding a new wing with new lighting, a new chiller in that. I'll be back here next year to present checks for that and any other projects that can be brought to us. Generally speaking, lighting, cooling, building controls, things like that. Those are the types of projects where it's real simple for us to quantify the energy savings and generate incentive dollars for the school district. It's our hope that the school district sees this money as an opportunity to continue to invest into the district and puts it towards further future energy efficiency projects, lighting. You know, I noticed the lighting that's in here, it's amazing. This is beautiful LED lighting. This is good quality lighting. You look out that hallway there, you can see the difference between the older fluorescents and the LED tubes. So maybe take some of this money, put it towards increasing the lighting throughout the campus so that the students, the teachers, administrators can all take advantage of this type of lighting throughout the facility. So please reinvest this money into additional projects at the district, okay? That's it. I just have we'll do a little photo with the check. Any questions?
Why did we have the 5-year hiatus? Because I remember when we used to do this and we would incentivize the teachers and so forth. Why did we have the 5-year?
So I really don't know. When I came into this role, one of the first meetings I attended was actually the pre-construction meeting for the new elementary school. So since I've been in this role, you've been engaged. Sometimes, you know, there's different changes in staffing. Maybe you didn't have a lot of new projects that could have been incentivized. It's hard to say. One of my jobs is to try to stay in front of school districts and other entities that qualify to participate in these programs, and it can be a challenge sometimes. You know,
the program didn't pause or cease.
No,
it's just that we didn't our yeah. involvement.
We had staff change.
Or whatever. I'm sorry.
We had staff change.
Yeah, I don't know. No, there has been no pause in the program. It's the program is completely subscribed every single year, so all the money spent is just a matter of Splendora taking advantage of it, getting in the queue.
I remember now our chief left, and he was over that back then,
yeah.
and that's what it was. Okay.
It happens a lot. Yeah, staff changes are a big part
that's
of
what it was.
There's some other districts right around here that I'm having the same struggle with. You know, the people that are there now don't have the history of the program, don't understand it. It's fairly simple to participate into the program. But they don't have the basis of knowledge.
And it doesn't cost us anything, right?
Nothing.
I mean, it's, yeah.
This is actually ratepayer funds. So yeah. If you think about every time, every month when the district writes checks to Entergy, a little bit of those checks go into a fund, which is meant to reimburse customers for making these investments. So please take advantage of it. If y'all are thinking of any lighting or cooling, even just regular scheduled changeouts of, you know, rooftop air conditioning units, they qualify. As long as you're not installing code minimum, you're going higher than minimum, they qualify. All you need to do is call us, and we'll take care of the rest. Okay? Anybody else?
Solar panels? You got to pay for them?
Entergy does not yet pay for solar, but I think it's coming. Yeah. I know Conroe just did a really big solar plant, and I think they're going back and forth with Entergy to try to figure out how to get some sort of incentive out of that. But as of now, no.
We've got a lot of roof space if you want to get the solar.
Solar's great. Right. Solar's fantastic. Okay. High upfront cost, but it pays in perpetuity. So, anybody else?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Who would like to be in the room?
Come on, Eric.
It makes sense now because I remember when Chief was over that.
You asked, I just started thinking about what that was about.
Yeah, and that's what. But at one point, because I thought we had even asked at some point. And it just didn't get handed off because I knew we stopped doing it because we stopped doing the drawing. So I remember asking.
But we did the drawing.
Did we? But we haven't done the drawings in, 3 years. And so that's kind of what triggered me. I was like, what's going on? And for some reason, I was thinking the program had just...
Because you got
I know.
I'm sorry.
No, but, you know, that looks cool. So I have to take this underneath my nose because it clogs up my glasses.
Yes, I'm going to bring down the management report.
I don't know if I have any huge checks to hand out to you guys.
Go ahead and sit down.
But I have a short presentation, so that's just going to work. All right, so... That's good. All right, so last year in January is when I made this report last time. So that's why you'll notice that we have a January to October time frame. So we're doing 10 months here. You'll notice that. So basically, this is going to be kind of quick to the point. But the district, we've reduced our consumption. We track every month. I have a massive spreadsheet that has some nice little pivot tables on it that I like to play with. But I take all of our billing. I've signed up for all of our online portals for everything except for the city of Splendora. I still have to call them to get that information. But we take all of our bills and compile them into a database, and we basically track and train all of our usage, which is a good thing. We're on the newer, Timber Lakes, and the new upgrade that we did to the building automation control over at Greenleaf, we're able to see real-time data. So if there's a problem, we know something's happening. As of right now, it's tracked daily. It's tracked on a monthly basis, so basically we're 30 days behind. We get the bill, we can see what's going on. So as expected, when you start looking at the graphs, you can see that there was a, during the spring, when everybody was gone, there's a savings, you'll see a dip. And then you can turn around and you can see when everybody starts coming back. The next bullet point up here is just talking about the 6265. So operationally, we engage with vendors that supply us with lighting. Boss Lighting is a good company that does that. We buy a lot of our outside lighting on an operational basis. We buy tube lights and replace some wall packs and so forth. And they will work the incentive into the quote. So then I track that and just summarize it here. So over the last 10 months, we'd say 62, 65, just by selecting about what we're finding.
So you're, each time you replace something, you're going yes. more efficient.
Yes. And I like to buy in bulk because you get better pricing and it helps you to earmark the money for the year so that you're not getting towards the end of the year and you're running out of money. So you've already earmarked all that money. So it makes it easier for us to go out and say, hey, Glenn, my representative over there, hey, I need to get so many lights, you know, for my facilities. He has a list of everything. He'll give me a quote, work in my rebate into that quote.
Is that the same rebate that like Entergy?
Oh yeah, it's very similar. Yeah, depends on where we buy it from, but yeah, it's the same, pretty much the same thing. So as you'll see, the green line on the graph, you can see April, where we were gone for COVID. Right about June, we come back. We ran some of the facilities for a long period of time for cleaning. We were going 24/7 on some of these buildings where they're coming due. Getting ready for school to come back. So as we kind of go through, you'll see a little spike around July, June, or so. And then we're on track. It looks like to have some pretty good numbers for this year. I'll be interested to see the October numbers, to be honest. Next slide. You can kind of see here, you know, so usage, we're below where we were last year. Definitely the purple line here is 2019, 2020 is green. You know, we're looking good. I think we're going to be good for this year. Next slide, please. All right, so this is well usage. So we talked a little bit about this earlier. I had some questions from Mr. Sessom here. So our well usage, we have well one and well two here on this property. Well one and two, well two, average every month at 700, or yeah, the average for every month is 750,000 gallons. So some of that's used in the schools. Meter it at the well, at each one of the wells. So well one, well two has a meter. And then you have a meter that's also located at the softball field, the baseball field, and the practice fields that are out back here. We water those. Those are all that we irrigate. We don't put grass, we don't put water on the grass in front of any of the schools. We haven't needed to. We're also monthly track, and we watch our numbers. Well, I'm not going to even say monthly. Every day, they go around. I have my guys go around, and they take meter readings. They turn them into me. We track them on a spreadsheet that we've had for, I think it goes back 10 years. So I can see my well usage. It also shows the effluent coming out of the plant, so we can see what we're coming at, what's coming out of the well, what's going into the plant. We can take the difference tell what's going on to the ground. So we can tell what we're using for irrigation or if we have a leak or something like that. So we keep a pretty good tight watch on this. We have 10 million gallons that we can use. So it's, we pay, you know, pay for the permits, which is a small fee a year, and then we don't pay a dime for water until we go over that 10 million. Then when we go over that 10 million, we start paying for gallons. So we watch it very closely. We're not really budgeted for that over 10 million part, so I'm sure Kevin love it if I try.
Is that the credits, the credits that we have to purchase? Is that what this is? No? Okay.
Yeah, we don't purchase credits. So every year
we did purchase credits, but with the new law, I think that's beautiful.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Lone Star Groundwater in Conroe is the ones that we work with on this.
Oh, okay.
They're a conservation group.
Okay.
And they monitor all the aquifers in the area.
So then we don't, I'm sorry, so then we don't have to do the, I know at one time the city had come to us asking for some of our credits or something like that, and so now we don't have to do that at all, right? Like there's no realization
busted,
of.
We have busted our threshold, but I'll have to dig into the new law, but I want to say out of last legislature there was some change with Lone Star specifically, and I want to say the way that shook out is our purchase water credit. Credits basically uses to us now. There's not a use for that or a requirement, but I'd have to dig it.
Okay, that's okay. Okay, thank you.
I think it's also loosened some of the requirements too. When I went out to talk to Lone Star about a month ago, they were telling me that there's no longer a big drive to try to decrease our consumption. Not as much as there was before, because it's less. as you can see, 750,000 gallons average per month, and that's how it's been for about the last 10 years. There was one year that we went over, I think it was 2013 maybe, but besides that, we were very close to not going over. You can kind of see, let's see, June is a little bit over a million gallons, which that's a little bit high for us. But that is because we were putting excess water on the fields to grow in the new sod. And we had a leak behind the softball fields that we repaired. So we had a little bit of usage there. It was a little odd. But besides that, we're on track that we here.
Do you expect October to be increased, though, as well?
No, I think October's going to be a
standard.
Well, actually, I know October's a pretty drastic increase. I already have the numbers for October. So we're done, and we're sitting here.
We're still okay. Okay. But Eric, by that though, we're pretty darn close to that 10 million though, aren't we?
We are.
By that, okay. But still forecasting for November and December, based on, we're good. Okay.
Yeah. And our numbers are good. Okay. So natural gas consumption. So we're broken into East Campus, West Campus, on this side of the school district. Center Point Business Solutions is the group that we used to work with. They are now a company called Synergy. Like I said, we're purchased a couple months ago. So that's something that was kind of a surprise to us. But needless to say, natural gas is kind of a small, it's really kind of a small utility. We keep an eye on it, but, and we track it. You know, we look for leaks and we make sure there's no crazy spikes. Other systems are just not access to that information.
I would say ISS is four, mainly because of components, systems that are on it. At least Peach Creek has got some newer equipment, the chill water, the docking system, but every unit at ISS is looking for an excuse to go out. Too many.
You have that little ceiling
down. Eric, I couldn't hear you the first part when you answered Barry. Were you saying because you can't see the data? You don't have like the ability to see where there's outages?
That's true. So for example, in this school, I can pull up the floor plan, the school building automation system, and I can look at each one of the rooms and I can see what the temperature is, how it was scheduled. I can look at the trends on humidity and temperature in that room. It goes all the way back months. So if I had a teacher call me and say, hey, I've been hot, I'll pull that room up, pull her trend, and I can see, you know, what the temperature's been, and I can kind of see how things react and how it's been scheduled, and I can make adjustments as needed. Some of these buildings, I don't have that ability. I mean, we just did an upgrade on Greenleaf where we didn't have that ability. Now Greenleaf's great. I can go in there and I can see Greenleaf, pull up the floor plan, in seconds I know what's going on. You know, I can take and I can move dampers around and I can do some troubleshooting right there from, I can do it from my phone.
And we didn't do that at Peach Creek? Just because we didn't budget for it, or?
So there's an older system. It's called Johnson JCI Medisys. It was installed when they did that Daikin system. It was a Lang project, kind of complete, kind of not, so there's some issues with it, kind of a lower grade system, but it's past its prime, it's time to go. I mean, if we can move that up to a newer system, that would greatly, that would help a lot.
Is that something that has been budgeted already, or is it just something that's just not been on the radar?
I'm trying to get Peach Creek out of the business, not in it, but we're going to be stuck with it. But that whole Daikin system, when they installed it, it's been a nightmare since day one. That's the project, if you remember, that Regina and Dr. Price removed Rusty out of that conversation, and they took over the project. We probably at some point in time could have sued the contractor and the supplier, because it's just a miserable component piece. They've done enough repairs. The biggest problem was all aluminum lines and connectors that leaked like a sieve. And most of all, that's been replaced with copper over time, and it's not near a nightmare for Eric that it was for us. But it was a wreck.
So I guess as part of our facility management, though, we should probably be looking at, you know, what is the life of that building if we're going to be living there for a while? And I think we are.
That's just it. You have to build something without, you have to build a replacement campus to take that capacity to shut that thing down. And
when are we going to have we're going to have the growth to, right. We're never going to have the capacity to do that. So we should be looking at.
And we are. So we have a 5-year plan. If you look on the 5-year plan, it has building automation system for Peach Creek.
Okay, that's what I was asking, is if it's in the plans, if it's not budgeted for like this next year or anything, but it is in the plan for future.
I can't say it's budgeted necessarily, but there is, it's in the plan. It's listed on the plan, so we know it's coming, and we know we need to plan for it.
Gotcha, okay, thank you.
You know, the beautiful thing about that, too, is that, you know, the way that I've structured our staff is that they can now start to really fine-tune their skills in these buildings. The guy that I have in the high school knows the high school really well. He's been here for a year and a half. I mean, well, Paul's been here for years. But he's been focusing just on this school for the last year and a half. I have Danny Shores over at Peach Creek Elementary. He's been trained to work on these systems. So he's able to pull these systems apart, clean them, put them back together. He can go in and he can go through and pull error codes. So the more proficient the guys get, the better off we'll be.
Right. And even without having that central automation or what have you, they're just knowing the building, they'll...
Right.
It's
just
somewhat.
Knowing its quirks. I mean, okay. Just, yeah, being able to focus specifically on certain spots, that helps quite a bit. Helps a lot. Alleviates a lot. I mean, my day used to look like I would come in and the first hour of my day was sitting there reviewing building automation, because that's going to be your biggest complaint. If you have a school that's down, a chiller that's down, a whole entire facility with no AC, no heat, no whatever, that's going to be your biggest thing for the day. That's where my focus was going to be for that whole day. And as things start to get fixed and start to get replaced, and my guys, you know, they start to learn a different process and they start to fine-tune their skills, they can look at, they're charged with doing an initial review of all the buildings every day when they get in. You get to work, I want you to touch base with that front office. I want you to find out if they have anything going on. I want you to walk your facility. Jump on your building automation system. They all have laptops now. They all log in. They can get on whatever program it is that they're running at that particular school. And they can do a quick glance review. Why, I'm not sitting there for an hour. I can focus on my job doing things like energy management and other things like that.
So, Eric, and I'm sorry that I know we need to move on.
Oh, no.
Okay, but, and this is probably a stretch. You can tell me if it is. But with Peach Creek having a higher number of some of the COVID, is it, I mean, could some of this in air quality be going hand in hand in any way?
So there's two components to that. So there's two people that you really pay a lot of attention to. You have ASHRAE and you have the CDC. Both of them point back towards filtration as being your biggest thing. So air viruses conveying through the system and moving from room to room. It all boils down to filtration. A minimum of a MERV 13 is what they recommend, and that's what we install. We install a MERV 13 in all of our buildings. Some of them you can't, but I would say 95% of all of the filters in this building are MERV 13. So you pull up ASHRAE's recommendations for what to do for this virus. And that's the first thing you have to take care of your filtration. You look at your indoor air quality. You know, you're looking at the way these buildings are built, they have a certain percentage of fresh outside air that's supposed to ventilate the building throughout the day. So you want to make sure those systems are online and they're working right. You want to make sure your filters are clean. You want to make sure your coils are clean. You want to make sure your belts are tight. You're putting out the air from the units that they're supposed to be and they're designed to do. You want to schedule things appropriately. If you know that you're going to have a big event with a lot of people, you want to schedule that longer than you would typically if you just had a regular day. You want to have more air changes in that building to cover that. And we do that. We do all these things.
But you're doing it manually at Peach Creek right now. I mean, I'm just curious if any of this might kind of go hand in hand. If that's our building that has the least energy efficiency and the automation is almost not, and you have a high volume or higher case over there. I mean, I'm just curious if maybe there's something to that. I mean, Am I just way off? I could be way off, and I don't feel good, so.
Well, you have to look at how the systems are designed, too. So we're not moving air from one classroom to the other classroom. The air that's in the classrooms, those units that we have, they circulate that classroom. It's actually different than this building. So this building would be a worst-case scenario for me if you had, say, if you had a classroom that has a bunch of cases of COVID. So you're taking all that air and it's going through the returns, it's getting sucked back to a central unit, and then it's getting distributed to 20 classrooms. We're over at Peach Creek, we're circulating one classroom, it gets filtered, and it's all self-contained. And that place is like a bomb shelter. So there's not, if you go above ceiling, this is probably 10 feet above the ceiling. There's that much room above ceiling, and it's concrete wall to concrete wall. So there's really not a lot of conveyance from classroom 207 to 211, for example. And we do
over time too. Peach Creek up until 2 weeks ago was leaving when we had other cases.
Was it? Okay.
Over time, Peach Creek has actually been
better at that. Okay.
At least. I was worried. Yeah. In terms of COVID. But lots could change in 2 weeks.
Well, I was just curious if there was a correlation, really, between the energy efficiency and having some of these things in place, and now suddenly.
That's the biggest sales call we get, or the biggest sales calls I get right now is about treating air.
Plexiglass air partitions, I get those.
Oh,
plexiglass
my God.
Partitions.
I'm getting those.
What's the cost?
I have no idea.
For changing the air filtration, right now we're doing minimal.
He's doing the recommended
13? Yeah. So, what's more advanced than that?
17. I think that's the highest
rating. So, in coalition with Jackie's question, what would be a cost if we just took the chance to see if we upgraded Peach Creek to see if it made a difference?
So, our 17 upgrade the filters.
And is it something that we should be even?
Supposedly, there's this new strand of this.
We're doing what we minimum says if there's a problem. If it's,
but it's not the minimum, it's what they recommend that we catch the virus, too, right?
I mean, it is. That's true.
It's not the industry standard, it's what the CDC is.
So what you might have caused is typically MERV 13. We install MERV 13, which is above, way above the green line. When you start getting to higher level filtration, you start getting them to use more air solution. So sometimes you have to kind of balance between overshooting the unit and slowing down your airflow. And I think MERV 13 is probably a good standard process where we're not putting a load on the units the way that
you're the expert this one.
Yeah.
No, we're trying to figure it out. But
one other point to remember is our contact tracing has indicated that it's not being spread from within the campus, it's coming from the outside in. Gotta remember that too.
With your technician, do you have any kind of idea what this
Let me begin. It's a kind of a but it's taking that to go out. So, so I'm going to make the rest of this. I make this really quick here. So this is the city of Split Door. We did two things with them. We buy water, we send them back the sewage, and we buy gas. Our only gas consumption over there is pretty small. We have the kitchens above the schools, and then there's a little bit of very little gas heater. We run some generators. There's a generator on the warehouse, but really for the most part, not a lot of water and gas usage out of these buildings. Okay. This is Timberlakes. So this is a little bit scary. You'll see this graph for some reason goes backwards. Anyway, so you have July, August, September, and October. So July was real small. We weren't really doing anything. We just took on the contract. There really wasn't water usage. And then all of a sudden, we had these contractors building the school that decided to start using all the water. Well, it's part of the construction. So, those 2 months, July and September, where water increase was real high, and then we're down in October, which hopefully
that's going to be our baseline from here out. You can see the costs associated with that on the side over here are pretty substantial. So we're not going to be watering grass over there for very long. It's a good spring.
Okay.
Is
that included in the
75,000? No, it was not, actually. So that's not included because they purchased that water. That water's tracked through the budget. Yeah, it's separate. So we, the $10 million is at this. And so this really is talking about, you know, we purchased LED lights for the most part. I don't buy fluorescents, and we have a stash of them for lights that go out that we can't get to do the LED conversion. You know, a lot of the savings, the electrical management plan, you know, a lot of the savings come from your scheduling and outside lighting. I'm sure that you guys all drive by this campus right here at 9:30 at night. Go to the store. If you were to come back at 10:05, all the lights would be off. So I run up to 10 o'clock, we turn them off for the rest of the night, and right about right before the kitchen staff shows up, they come back on. So I think that might be a little bit of our energy savings. The next thing, we're talking about smart meters here. So that's one thing that it gives us the ability to see real-time usage. So if we have a problem, I have to wait 30 days and waste money for 30 days to figure out what the solution was. And that's just a part of as we grow and we do renovations, like Greenleaf has a smart meter on it, Timberlake has a smart meter on it, and Peach Creek, after we're done with the Christmas renovation, will have a smart meter on it. So I'll be able to see real-time energy usage in these buildings. That way, if we have a problem, you know, we can set up alerts. We can set up a kilowatt cap, and if it gets over that cap for the day, it can send me a text or an email saying, hey, we've got a problem over there. Then equipment efficiencies, you know, we kind of hit on that. Controls upgrades, you know, there's a machine for that. Chillers and HVAC cans, very important. You know, it kind of goes to the air restriction talking about with like the MERV-17 filter. If you put a high restriction on these units, same thing as having a dirty coil. If you're not cleaning your equipment and taking care of it, your energy efficiencies go way down. You know, your usage is going to go down. And then life cycle, you know, we have a 5-year plan that we've established. You know, as that grows and that becomes part of what we do, and you replace equipment, it gets replaced with higher energy efficiency. You know, it's part of growing, part of updating. You know, the next part of this is really kind of talking about that policy that you guys have in front of you. I think you guys, a lot of you have copies of that. I wasn't really planning on going step by step over that item, but that is, I think probably in January we talked about an energy management policy. Something that we can hold people accountable for, which is define some of the roles and responsibilities, and that's really what I try to do with this document. It's a draft. Should be pretty close to being complete, but it's something that I wanted to present to you. It lays out the role of energy manager. There's an energy management committee, which we representatives from different campuses. You know, maybe an AP, maybe somebody from student council can participate. It allows us to make good decisions on what we're going to be doing. These will be our energy champions, so I'm not just sitting here, you know, making all these choices where it may affect Diana or somebody on a different campus, something that I don't see. She has a representative, maybe Bay or somebody from over here, who can step in and say, hey, this is what, you know, we see from our side. So we can make collaborative group decisions. Things like, you know, maybe establishing a recycling plan or something. And Dr. Burke is designated as my executive on this. So you're
going to be energy champion.
Energy champion.
Yeah. That's the only reason I signed up.
You got a cool name?
Because I'm delighted.
Don't worry, I have a chill of plaque, too. and so it lays out some responsibilities. You know, I separated the energy management position from maintenance. My other position is the maintenance director, because at some point we may grow to where they're actually separate jobs. And so we'll see, you know, it talks about coordinating and working with maintenance. So I wanted those separate.
I like
the educational opportunity.
Lays out a little bit of responsibility for campus here. You know, it says things like seeks out conservation minded educational opportunities for students and coordinates needs for good energy management. You know, it's collaboration between there's groups like Lone Star Groundwater. You've already heard me talk about them. Lone Star Groundwater has a huge education, kind of a traveling circus for water conservation. They want to park a bus up here in our parking lot and show the kids how to conserve energy. So it's just a matter of me getting with Heath or, you know, with Carrie and set these things up. These are good educational opportunities for the kids. You know? Mm-hmm. It's good PR. It's good, you know, learning. My daughter, I mean, I don't know if anybody's heard this, but my daughter came out of Piney Woods. She came home and she built a compost bin. You know, I have a big compost at the house. Everything from our kitchen goes into the compost. But she learned out of Piney Woods, you know? So those are the kind of things that we should grow in there, in my opinion.
I agree. I love that, Eric. And I mean, I love the opportunity for the kids to get involved and to learn, but to also take some ownership, too. We talk about that as part of our learner profile, et cetera. It's that accountability and responsibility.
You know, a lot of people, they have a Watts Doctors program where it teaches the little kids to get involved. And, you know, there's activities for the little kids. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things we can do with kids there. You know, so this kind of lays out some general requirements. You know, it's basically turning off computers. You know, heaters aren't allowed, as much as I'm probably going to get tomatoes thrown at me, but heaters aren't allowed. It defines further down what we're doing for lighting schedules. Heaters, yeah, I know a lot of people laugh, but, and I've been through two heater fires at U of H. They're not good.
Tammy's talking about heat.
Tammy got all of you.
I know. We track your electrical consumption. You can see it. when the lights get dim, we just like, hey, Tammy's cool. I'm kidding. All right. So, and then it lays out more responsibilities. It defines what we're doing for lighting schedules and HVAC schedules and temperatures and so forth. But this is something I wanted to get in front of you to see that, you know, we're trying to do something. I wanted to get your sign off. I'm hoping, you know, you're...
Eric, I just want to thank you for keeping the lights on at the admin building in the parking lot. Thank you for keeping the lights on in the parking lot at the admin building.
Well, we try to keep the lights on at all the parking lots.
I think you
put
the
lights on. Bam!
Eric, before you go, are there some low-hanging fruit as far as energy efficiency that you think we should reach back when it's going in?
So, I come from a little bit of different background than a lot of people do. There's something called greenwashing, and I'm sure that you guys have, a lot of people have heard of that. So there's a lot of programs out there that will come in and they'll say, hey, we'll walk your facility, kind of like what energy is going to do a good thing for us. They're free. But there are consulting agencies that will bill you thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars to do the same thing. And at the end of the day, they're going to show you some numbers of what they could have done and what they might have done, and if everything was perfect, how it could have ended. That's greenwashing. So these are the things where it doesn't have a lot of bite. When you say low-hanging fruit, to me what that means is we're looking at chiller efficiencies. These are big $100,000 energy hogs you have attached to the backside of this building. Is that thing running right? Are all the fans on it working? What's your saturation temperatures? You know, these are the details that really you have to get into. And if you don't know that stuff, this thing's just sitting out there sucking down energy. You know, we can go through and replace LED lightings, which is just a small fraction of what you're doing. But if you're not making sure all of your outside air handlers are clean and working efficiently, scheduled right, the dampers are open when they're supposed to be open, the sequences aren't working, then you're really kind of just, you're chasing your tail. But that's what I look at when you say there's low-hanging fruit. Yeah, scrubbing the systems and making sure the sequences are good. Making sure that, you know, you don't have air registers in office that are blocked and causing all kinds of problems and drag on units. And, you know, there's a lot. It's, you know, but it's progress. It's small progress that we have to chip away a little bit at.
But there's not, we don't have like one big energy hog that we need to go, you know, slaughter that hog.
No.
Poor Tammy.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Dan. Any other questions? All right, guys.
Good job.
Thank you, guys.
Good job.
Hey, we'll put the kill on the guns.
Heat rate report. Buddy.
You have something from here.
Any questions, buddy?
No.
Buddy, I did have, so the line to Timberlake
we there's a big fee. I guess we paid the part of the construction, and then we pay a monthly bill too.
We paid a piece of the construction itself to run it there, and then we pay the service, the monthly service fee. And that was bid out through the E-rate process. Everyone, AT&T, Suddenly, PS, Lightwave, everyone had a chance to bid on the construction of that through E-rate, and Suddenly came in. I think the next close, they were 70 something thousand. I think the next closest was 140,000, so it was way less. Is that it? All right. Cool.
On the police report.
The report up there, we did two original reports, three accident reports. One of them was a bus. Very interesting. I just went to chief school last week, a lot of ISD chiefs. I'm surprised the number of ISDs that do not work for bus wrecks. So these people work our bus wrecks as long as I'm here.
They don't? Why do they not?
They get the city or the county to work.
They feel like it's a conflict of interest because a lot of agencies won't work their own contractors. We work ours at different times.
Same way the two accidents.
I see an insurance company going again.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah.
Going okay. Through school and coming from school, those involved our kids.
Yeah.
I'm not going to work accidents if we don't have to, but if they're involving our kids, dismissal time.
Yeah.
Okay. Three sick events, medical call at the high school, the fire alarm at Timber Lakes when they had the gas leak, and they evacuated the whole school. I think there was something wrong with the kitchen, but everything was okay. Then the bus wreck, which was actually on 242. Car hit the bus, no students on there, so that was a simple explanation. Personnel-wise, there's seven of us. Officer Salias, last day with the city's Twin Door is Thursday, so as soon as we get back from Thanksgiving holidays, she'll be permanent in front of us. I have a guy graduating this Friday, who's the fastest team coach. Everything will be good. If not, he gets three chances to take it, so hopefully he can pass it into the time. Budget issues, the only reason I put that up there, new body cam system. The one we have is very old. We just don't have enough body cameras. I'm just now starting to get bids, but just throwing that out there, we're probably going to have to buy a new system. My goal is to buy the same thing the city's Glendora uses, which is Exxon. I think that's probably your best bet right now. It's very user-friendly. We can all learn each other. That way, if we have any problems, we can jump across the street. Productivity report, the patrol side is pretty much Stacy. Then I sprinkled in there with me whenever I decided to run radar. They tagged me on Waze, which is in there in high school. The rest of them, Peach Creek, Piney Woods, they're all doing their safety checks. We started drills that last week of October and in November, the lockdown, lockout. I will grab the high school and junior high after Thanksgiving break. But everything so far has been good. Besides that, nothing specific. Said a few traffic stops. We've written some warning tickets, but everything else up there is good. I think I mentioned last time primary and secondary calls will be different for us. If the principal or a teacher calls us, not necessarily Montgomery County calling us, it's the teacher says, I need an officer to handle this situation. So we count that as a primary call. Besides that, Green Eagle probably up there because Terrence helped it out. I don't have anybody specifically assigned there. We all pop in and out every day. We're there. I know they had some new sources one day.
Deep breath. So much.
So like Eric, I feel like I can have a call back if I can come with a big check. But unlike Eric, I can't say my report is short because it's kind of three reports rolled into one. And so I would really, really like to give you a lot of information, but I would like for it to be very interactive. So ask questions, jump in whenever you feel free. Let's move through this. I was working on a slide presentation this weekend. My daughter informed me it was very dull and boring. And so I should put pictures, but I said there are just so many words. You've got to get the words in. And so, you know, feel free. I can give you as much or as little information as you want about what we're doing moving forward, what the legislation says, and how Panorama is going to help us support all of those. And so we'll start first with Panorama, and then we're going to wrap it back up and end with Panorama. So you have in front of you, maybe the Panorama survey first. I made you a hard copy in case you haven't had a chance to review it over the weekend. And I do not believe that you ever got the Panorama teacher survey that we did last year. Is that correct? Because we did it right before we went out.
Yeah, no, I don't think we.
And so the survey,
we discussed it.
It was on the next agenda, and then everything kind of COVID happened, and that's all I can say about everything from this room is COVID happened, and here we are. And so what we did this year was come in and do another Panorama survey specifically designed to measure some of the things that we want to know about what's going on. And so first of all, to really talk about what Panorama is, it's more than just a survey tool. It is a platform that we bought for the district to help support our strategic process moving forward. And so we've got to start with that understanding. It's not just a survey. It's customizable. We can do a lot of things with it. We can find out a lot of information about it. And it's something that we're going to start doing on a regular basis. And so when we do a survey, we get a report back that's like this, that is specifically tailored to our district and broken down into what we need to do. And so using the data to support our goals, it's not a grade, it's not a score, and it's not an evaluation. And so when you open up the survey and you look at it, the first intention is to say, oh, look at this page. You know, general school impressions is 61%. You know, because we work in education, we think, oh, that's a 61. So we must have failed. Or a 62, we must have failed. And the professional needs individual learning is 36. We really must have failed. But it's not a grade. It's not a score, and it's not an evaluation.
It's a baseline.
These are just pieces of information mm-hmm. to support what we need to do moving forward. And so, do you have any questions about that before we dive into the details? Okay. Now, when we sat down to design the survey, we had to think first, what is it that we want to learn? And so, first of all, how connected are our teachers to SISD? Because the more connected they are, the more they're willing to stay. We want to keep them, we want to have retention, we want to show growth. So how do we measure that? what is the overall experience of our staff on campuses? We want it to be positive. If it's not positive for our teachers, it won't be positive for our kids. So how do our teachers feel about their overall experience? And then how effective do our staff members perceive our leadership? You know, we've worked a lot on leadership over the last few years and making sure that we have the right leaders in place to lead us through some hard times. And this survey, 100%, has shown that we have the right leaders in place because our leadership is not wrong. And all of this is covered, being out since March, and everything we've asked teachers to do since they came back, our leadership scores did not drop. So that is a huge bonus in my book. And then, you know, how we provide teacher support for digital learning. Last spring, we were talking about piloting a group of 10 teachers to start digital learning. You know, they all volunteered.
How many? How many would volunteer?
Our teachers, most of them did not volunteer for this. This was nothing that they had ever imagined that they could do. And here they are doing it. You know, 3 months, 6 months, and they're going to continue. And so the Coalition of the Ready became the Coalition of the Not Ready, but Here We Go. And so we want to know, what do they need moving forward? And then basically, everything that we've been through, I think we're all suffering from a little PTSD along the way. So how well are our teachers? You know, what can we do to support them so that they can support our kids? So that's what we were looking for. And so if you look at the first section, it's over belonging. And the one thing that I want you to consider when you're looking at these questions, the way that they're broken down, someone and sometimes are very, very, very important. In fact, that is probably the most important category to look at. When Panorama does their survey results and they spit out their reports, the favorable scores are the ones in green on top. But they are completely understanding and understand what it is. They understand somewhat questions are the people that we have a great opportunity to change because they're sitting on the fence. They don't really commit one way or the other. And so depending upon what we do next, we'll determine, do they go favorable or do they go unfavorable? And so that somewhat category is the category to watch. So when we look at belonging, and again, I want you to think about retention when you think about belonging. 65% favorable response, but 26% are in the middle waiting to be convinced. So that's our somewhat group. So if we can convince that 26% to bump up with the 85%, I'm not going to do the middle math, but that's pretty high. So we're really sitting in a good spot. That's why you can't look at that 65 as a failing, right? That is an opportunity. We have 26% of our staff that are sitting there waiting to be convinced. They all feel one way or the other. So another important takeaway from this page that I found was that the respect shown by colleagues is equal to the respect shown by leadership. And so they are not seeing our leaders as authoritarian, talking down to them, telling them what to do. They are in this with their colleagues, and they are in there with their leaders. And so the question coming out of this for our building principals, as they move forward with their leadership team, is how do we increase the connectedness and belonging of our staff? Because if they can do that at the campus level, then they can increase those somewhat scores into favorable scores. Section 2 is general school impressions. Now, this one was extremely interesting to me because it's 61%. And again, you know, your natural impulse is to think, oh, 61's not that great. But again, take into the 25% into consideration. And these questions were the exact same questions we asked last spring. Every question on this section we asked last spring, and there was no drop. To me, that is a to go through what we have been through, and to have teachers start school, you know, the coalition of the unready, the digital, the all the training, the COVID, starting remote, rolling kids in, we didn't lose ground. We do have room for improvement. We do have the somewhats and somehows, but we didn't lose ground. And to me, that speaks volumes of our leadership and the work we've done in real time. And so if you have any questions about any of those specifically, I do have last year's scores if you're interested, but they're not printed off for me.
Questions?
Yes.
Leadership. How do we
Well, I'm going around meeting with each one of the businesses. So I'm going to meet each today, yesterday, and we've been through the surveys and we asked those same questions. And so they're going out and they're going through their leadership teams and they're addressing the questions. How do you show them that we understand their challenges? Because you've got at the district level or campus level, like 26% of them are somewhat. So how do you convey to your staff? Because, you know, we've all been running 9 years now. And sometimes we don't take the time to stop and say, hey, I'm in listening. I do understand. What the teachers are not seeing is the background. But they're sitting in those backgrounds making plans all the time, every day. And then they come out and say, here's a plan. And they're like, oh, you changed something. Well, the change is in response to trying to make things better. So I don't think that the message is that we're the community, that we're all working together. Does that make sense? Does that answer the question? So if we do a better job conveying what we're doing, and the principals do a better job conveying what we're doing, it rolls down.
And I think that's part of two levels. We're two levels away. Sometimes three. Combination of us just kind of strong connection with the fact that we're in the place of the moment. Like I know Brian, every single movie in our district, they ask them how to do it, and that's because it happened in the district. And so it's just an effort. We have our district faculty meetings that we're doing now that we go around, and so it's just a matter of them. So can I get back to what I was teaching? I never even thought about the superintendent or the business manager. That was always like my building principal. So how do we continue to, and I think it seems like this, survey, following up on the survey, getting more good there, being on campus more. And then also making sure that the message that comes from principals is the same message that comes from us. And that's a big part of it. I'm not saying that anybody did this, but sometimes it might be easy to say, well, this is what the central office is doing. And that could be it. That will happen in some districts, I'm not saying it's happening in ours. But I think there's a lot of factors that play into it.
Well, I think when we get to the end, we look at the stress and what the amount of it, and other people have some numbers on that. It's easy for them to say, well, they just don't understand what I'm going through. That's the personal background. And so, you know, that's just natural instinct for all of us. I think, you know, it's like, oh, I can't do this anymore, and they have no idea what they're asking me to do. I can't do one more thing, and here they go. So, I think it's explainable, but it's well made. The next section is the leadership section. And again, this is the one that I was saying has not dropped. So we're at 62%. But overall, our somewhats are still pretty high. We had an increase, like how much trust exists between school leaders and staff. This is just one example. In my heart, I thought that probably would have gone down since last spring, because we came in and said, hey, this is what we're going to do. And for professional development, we said, this is what you're going to do. You're going to learn Canvas. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. That score actually went up by 6%.
Wow.
And so whatever we're doing is working.
Mm-hmm.
Incrementally, we're getting there. Any questions on that section? Okay, professional needs during learning. I think this was by far, obviously, our biggest section. But look at our somewhat numbers there. This was our biggest somewhat section. And I think the main word to focus on when we look at this section is not necessarily the quality of instruction that we provided for the teachers, but how much are they confident? How confident? How confident are you? They're not confident. They got a little bit of training at the beginning of the year, and they had to dive right in and start providing instruction when they were ready. And so overall, with as many being somewhat, I'm happy with the results. And then for me, of course, as a counselor, the most interesting section is your well-being section. And the way that these questions were framed was, in the last week, how often did you feel? Okay, so when you look at engaged, how often did you feel engaged? 71% of our teachers, they stress overwhelm and
That doesn't account for the 25% that were somewhat engaged. And so that's how you read these questions. The scales on this section are incorrect. And so the copy that you got in your email is a little different than the copy here. So I went through and just kind of corrected the scales on the paper for you because they flipped some of them. They're supposed to be getting me another copy through Panorama that's corrected. But until then, you just kind of have to go with my chicken scratch on the paper. But to make it a little easier to look at, if you look at the district teacher scale of teacher well-being, I pulled these numbers out. And so this is what it looks like. So how much does your work matter to you? 99% of our teachers responded favorably. How meaningful is your work? 97% responded favorably. So if their work matters to them, it's meaningful, but look down at how effective do you feel at your job? 45%. So that's the problem. Look at frustrated, worried, stressed out, 58%, exhausted, 68%. Those are the things that are leading to, I think, some of the things that we're seeing with the sublets. Their job matters to them, but they feel like they're not doing it well because they're lacking the confidence in digital instruction.
Did this change year over year from the spring? I would say.
We did not do this one in the spring.
Oh, okay, okay.
It was only the leadership and the general.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
So this one is new.
Yeah.
So this is the first chance. We also did this on October 15th on that professional learning day. And so if we were to do this now, I think these scores would be different. Because of some of the adjustments we've made, mm-hmm. assigning the district teachers, not mm-hmm. having people do both
multiple.
At the same time.
Uh-huh.
So, really, what I can do is questions over this? So, we will be surveying our kids in the future and our teachers again. And so, I really want you to just keep in mind what Panorama is, what it looks like, and what we can do with it, because it's going to come up again later. So that was presentation one.
Did you say, though, like I think Alan was asking for some, do you have a committee that's going to be looking at what do we do to help these somewhats?
What do we do to help the somewhats? All of the principals are going to meet with their leadership teams, and they're going to go through what I took them through today, which is how to read the survey. And I gave them a presentation with leading questions on how to ask, and I gave them my notes. So that they know, but they're not going to use my notes. They're going to sit with the leadership team, ask those same questions, and let them process through it. Gotcha. And then when the leadership team processes through it, they're going to present the results to their faculty and go through and say, no, we're listening. This is what we've discovered through your feedback. What else can you add?
Gotcha. Okay.
And yes, there are focus groups coming later.
Okay.
That's presentation two.
Two.
I think you kind of answered probably a good part of my question, but If we see a leadership group or a principal is doing a great job of either using them or, you know, hey, they're doing something that's working.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
Your campus isn't.
Yes. Dr. Barnes meets with the principals once a week on...
It varies.
Well, that question was almost, I'll save it for him, but kind of, you know, this is probably a very valuable tool, I'm assuming, to you. I mean...
He said this was probably a very valuable tool for you in working with the principals. Because one of the things that I ask the principals to do is don't just focus on the things that aren't highly scored or aren't low scores. Focus on your high scores. Because if you're doing something right, keep doing what you're doing right and apply that same thing to the other principals.
I think this is going to be I hope that we've seen it's a powerful tool, and I think it's going to be.
I
just see a lot of real, I don't know, just a lot of insight and purpose. And I feel like this will guide us a lot in our direction.
I think it will too, and I think it will provide a framework for all of our goals moving forward. And I've got one of the goals built into the next presentation so you can see how that can filter in and support your data.
Lloyd, Dad, I was just going to say, I commend you for also not focusing on the red because those are your actively disengaged people that are typically going to always be actively disengaged. So,
and we do have groups, you know, a small group of people, unfortunately.
So I just commend you for focusing on those that have an opportunity for growth to bring it to that green.
And so moving forward, I have a serious plan for the next one, and we're going to do that.
And then COVID happened, and now we're here.
So there's that. And so basically, what I would like to do moving forward is talk a little bit about school counseling, what it is, what it isn't, what it is moving forward, and then some of the legislative updates that came out last spring that are really going to guide where we need to move with counseling, because it's really starting to focus much more on mental health support for our kids. You know what they should be doing. You've got your teachers. You know what they should be doing. You've got your counselors who are doing something different in every single district and maybe on every single campus, because nobody really knows how to tell them exactly what to do. You know, administrators go to administrator school, and then they're expected to supervise counsel departments, and they haven't been taught about counsel departments. And so it's like, oh, could you do this? Mm-hmm. Oh, and how about you do this? And so really focusing on what is for counseling, because it was originally designed for placement. I mean, that was it. Like, go see the counselor, figure out what you want to do for a living, and then go do it. So it's involved to include other duties, and sometimes it's been a catch-all. And that's not here. I'm not just saying here is a catch-all. I'm saying in every district I've been in, things have been different. And so the state has come and actually mandated what school counselors should look like. And so that's what we're doing. And that's what was in legislation. So traditional school counseling has not been developmental. It has been reactive, responding primarily just to crisis situations. If somebody's crying, they call someone else. You know, if it's a kid suffering bad, it's called someone else, something else. It's crisis related. The guidance is primarily focused on academic guidance, especially at secondary. It's clerical and administrative task driven. Traditionally, testing lands there a lot, because it's like, oh, the counselors can do it. It's unstructured, and the counselor works in isolation. Developmental school counseling programs are planned, they're intentional. You focus on preventing the crisis instead of just involving yourself in the crisis. It's group and individual guidance and counseling. There's a skill-based curriculum. It's student-centered. And the counselor works as a team member and as a campus leader. If you think about your campus counselors, you know, sometimes they work in the background. They're not the ones that with the administrative route. They're not the ones that are going to stand up and say, hey, look at what I do. They work in the background. But we need them to work in the foreground. We need them in the front, leading, especially with all the mental health crisis situations that we're having now. And so.
Could I just applaud you for a minute? Because I think so many times, one, I mean, I know a lot of districts, and I think we, obviously, Suzanne not being here tonight, but has helped to keep us grounded to not pile more on counseling. But I think so often the educators forget about the mental health part of it and they take actions that are actually, that aren't benefiting the kid emotionally mm-hmm. or educationally. Right. And having that perspective with the counselor would, I think, alleviate a lot of the stuff that, and I don't want to get on my rant about, you know, like taking free time or playground time mm-hmm. away from kids, but the reason we do that is an educational benefit, not any social emotional. It's not just to go have fun.
Well, we're about to focus so much on mental health that you will not forget that there was a counselor on campus. So where are we? And this is the slide that I made last week. And actually, this is the one slide my daughter fixed for me because she put the wildcat head on.
Good job.
That's all her. But last spring, when I sat down and started looking at all the new things coming, where we were, you know, our strengths in the counseling department, we have greatly increased our staff capacity. We've provided lots of training for the counselors, legal updates, conferences. We've brought trainers in. We've worked with Flippin' Group on two occasions to bring them in to talk to them just strictly about not being defensive. Because even you can't be defensive and change at the same time. Mm-hmm. Because we've got to point out some things that we're not doing well. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, having the district support us in that has been absolutely incredible. We have increased skills and confidence because of those things, and we've made some staff changes. So there are some people that, you know, need to go to another district and needed to replace them with someone who is more familiar with their mission. So last spring, I wrote the words, "We are ready." I'm going to tell you right now that we were ready, and we're almost ready now. Okay? We're still crippled, and we're still limping along, but we're still fighting through. But the COVID has really thrown a kink into everything, especially in our counseling world and all of those things to be developmental and plan ahead and not be reactive. Those have slipped by the wayside because I feel like we have started school four times this year. Mm-hmm. And let's hopefully not do it again. Four times is enough. So if there are quite a few pieces of legislation that we are ready to now jump into, that we're going to have to figure out. Hospital 18 and Senate Bill 11, two big ones that came in last year, and I know we talked quite a bit about them in the beginning and the instructional things that came out of those and a lot of the health and safety that came out for the police department and the trainings that we're having to put in. But there were a lot of things included in both of those bills about mental health. So we have increased focus on mental health service delivery in the school system. You know, statistics say if kids don't get mental health treatment while they're in school, most of them just don't get it. And so having the opportunity to have community providers come in is huge. Increased focus on mental health training. TEA has put out a best practice list on programs that work well. And I won't click you through it, but if you're interested, you can click on the best practice approaches and see all the different programs that have been approved. They have also made the Texas model for comprehensive school counseling. And they mandated that every school in Texas start following this model. I put it there for you. There's a link if you're ever just, you know, up late and you can't sleep. It's about 200 pages. And it'll walk you through how to form the Texas Model Comprehensive School Program. But if you really don't want to read it, I've read it. Take my word for it. It's good. It requires suicide prevention procedures and prevention education for all students. We just took all of our high school students through the Signs of Suicide program this in October. And in November, all of the junior high students will go through. That is one of those best practice approaches. It requires trauma-informed training to be included in district policy. There is one called Project Restore that's also on the best practice approach list, but it's about 6 hours long. So that would be hard to deliver to all staff all at once. So that's probably one of the best ones out there right now. There is another one that is supported by TEA called Trauma 101. And the counselors will be going through that on January 4th. So we'll start with them, and then we'll roll it out to our staff as we can through the fall. It requires the implementation of a character education program, K-12. It requires threat assessment teams and procedures that include mental health intervention, and it requires schools to support the return of the student after a mental health placement. So you can see, just from those few things that are out there, how much focus TPA is putting on mental health services in school. And so we've got to have counselors ready, trained, and able. So that's what the book looks like. The Texas Model for Comprehensive School Counseling. It does require a guidance plan. It does not specify a curriculum. There are lots of curriculums out there that you can buy, but you can also create your own. It does specify the role of the school counselor, and it makes recommendation for guidance times, and it puts those things in legislation, so we've got to move forward. Focus on the four components. These are the four. This is the highlight from the book, so that you don't have to read the book. We have a guidance curriculum, responsive services, system support, and individual planning. That's where counselors should be spending their time, in those four areas. I have highlighted responsive services and individual planning because that's where we are right now. We are on a daily, weekly, hourly, moment by moment, being responsive. And we can't get to the guidance curriculum and system support because of all the COVID crisis situations. Not just the mental health crises, but the scheduling crises, the remote learning crises, the changes in plans. So I'm hoping, so we came up for air a little bit last week. I'm hoping moving forward, all the changes that we've made, things are going to settle down and we can get back to some sort of normalcy so we can start implementing what's to come. Recommended percentages of the four components. They've been defined how much of a counselor's time should be spent doing certain things. And if you look at the guidance curriculum and look at the difference in the elementary and high school, your 35-45% of the counselor's time should be spent providing guidance in the high school. I mean, at the elementary school. I can tell you we are nowhere near that. But if you look at the high school, 15-25%, that's significantly less. But there's more individual planning and academic assistance required at the high school. So the state did a pretty good job taking care of the curriculum. And so we've got guidelines to help out. Recommended counselor to student ratio is 1:350. And that's what the Texas Counselor Association recommends. Some other organizations I've seen 1:500.
That still seems like a lot, though. I mean, that's a lot.
It is a lot.
I can't imagine one counselor doing all four of those things for 350 kids.
That's why you have to keep in mind that role of the school counselor is not to provide therapy. Yeah. I mean, it's not counseling like you think of when you go see a counselor. And so, again, that's the increased need for collaboration with the agencies so we can refer and get them seen.
Loda, what do you mean by responsive services?
Responding to an immediate need. You need a schedule change?
Okay.
I need to respond to your need and change it.
I gotcha.
Or have a crisis situation, I respond to your crisis.
I gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Anything that requires right then.
I gotcha.
Also included in the new legislation, they didn't leave anybody out. They included collaboration with community and referral agencies, like Tri-County is our local regional authority. They are listed in the legislation as well. So we've got communities and schools here. Handle care. I know you had that presentation a few months ago. We went live on October 30th, so I'll go over that in a little bit. We are also working on Santa Barbara. Also in legislation, they increase support for the region centers. They're expecting a lot more from the region centers to support our campus counselors. They've gone now from having one half-time person in the region six to having two full-time positions to support them. So we've got Connection with Community Resources. House Bill 19 funded a full-time person to work at the Region Center whose only job is to support mental health in our region. So we've got an increased emphasis on mental wellness from TEA, trauma-informed policies that they're putting out, like Project Restore. TEA actually developed Project Restore. So they're putting a lot of money and they have an entire branch that works strictly on mental health. And they're encouraging and requiring educational opportunities for students. So, where are we with Tri-County? And I think we're way ahead of the game because we are already, and this was last spring, all of this is from last spring. We are already having monthly meetings with Tri-County, with the mental health and substance abuse prevention coordinators to talk about how we can collaborate. Like, I just met with Rachel from Tri-County in Cleveland last week, and we made sure we had consent for all of the kids that Tri-County sees that Smidora serves, because they have dedicated two staff members to serve just the Smidora kids. And so Chelsea comes in and sees our English-speaking, and Ida comes in and sees our Spanish-speaking. So instead of having a group of rotating people come through with just a sign, they are assigned directly to only Splendor kids. And so we also have releases so that they can talk with our counselors and they can release information to us and we can release information to them. So we also have YPS, which is Youth Prevention Selective Prevention Groups that were on campus last year. We haven't started those yet this year because we're not bringing people in, but those are set to start next semester on all three of them. Well, I should say four now. You can see I did this one last week. All of the three campuses will have that opportunity to have those groups. With the collaboration with the Region Center, regular meetings with counselor support. Sherry Treadway is amazing. She is the new counselor support person for Region 6. And she was half-time last year. She's still half-time, but they've added another half-time. And they've added Stephanie Dewar as a full-time person. She's the one that's dedicated strictly to mental health support. And she came from Tri-County. And so she is familiar with Tri-County, and she's familiar with school. She's been a school counselor in Huntsville, so she knows the ropes. So she is coming in January 4th to do the trauma 101 training for the counselors.
She's from Region 6?
She is from Region 6. Communities and Schools is up and running. I found out today we're losing one of them. She was accepted a job today in Houston ISD, and so they will be hiring a replacement for her. She's still in high school. But they're up and rolling. They're doing lots of things. We're an active contributor to focus on attendance and welfare of our kids. How are we all listening to?
They're probably going to go to school. Services.
Responsive services. And we're passing off a lot of those things that come to us back on the past. So before you're also that students ask us all those things that we take from the counseling, they're building a lot of those. They're also starting to work with our kids in DAP to really get some control over so that they can be managed. So they'll see them off their DAP and transition them back to campus and meet with them in secretary of the campus to make sure they stay on track. And they participate in all of our weekly counselor meetings and any professional development that we have. Like we have a legal training tomorrow. Our lawyers are coming in to do a four-hour training. They'll be a part of that as well. Handle with Care in Safe Harbor. We're up to speed with them. Handle with Care went live October 30th. We have not gotten any Handle with Care emails yet from police departments, but I would expect that we will get into some of those any day. Safe Harbor. Just got to have a training through Safe Harbor about sexual abuse awareness training. And instead of just including counselors, we did counselors, communities, schools, nurses, and law enforcement. So we're all trying to meet regularly. And I know Chief has done an excellent job since he's come in, coordinating services, so we're all working together and all on the same page. Not him doing one thing, his people, and counselors doing one thing, and nurses doing one thing, but making sure we're all on track.
The Handle with Care, you said you suspected that to increase. We haven't received any emails. Is that just because of the holidays and kids being home?
Because of the holidays, you know, the tensions rise. You see,
it just started
on October 30th.
And it just started too.
Law enforcement are like remembering right away to send them, so I think they will be reminded on a frequent basis to start sending them. But you start seeing in October and November increases in CPS reports. I mean, where outcries go up because been in school long enough, kids start to trust what's going on in the classroom, so they start to tell. So we see an increase in outcries across the school. Huh. So with the stress at home, and the holidays coming up, and the bad financial situation, I think we're going to see more and more of those domestic violence type situations at home. We also have legislation that was included in those two things about kids receiving mental health education, so that they can help identify what's going on with me and what's going on with my friends. And so those are things that we are now required to educate children about. We're also required to educate our staff on suicide prevention, recognizing signs of mental health conditions and substance abuse, strategies for establishing and maintaining positive relationships, how grief and trauma affects student learning and behavior, and preventing and reporting incidents of bullying. And so training our staff to do all of those things, one of the things that will cover all of those, and it is one of the best practice approaches, is the youth mental health first aid training. And that is also offered here at Region County is free of charge, and it is a six-hour workshop that we can offer during the summer on one of our PD days. They can sign up, and it will cover all of those things at the same time. So, also included in the legislation was the threat assessment. And this calls for not just the physical safety, but the psychological safety of our students. And so Mr. DeBrock and I co-chair the threat assessment team. We have a district team that has been trained in the threat assessment. It's one of the most important times before something happens. And so when something comes up on the campus that's out of concern, we have a group trained to go in and evaluate how can we address this? Is this something we need to address? What are the next steps? Because we don't want it to escalate to violence. Portions of the campus teams have been trained, because you know there was COVID. And this was written last spring. And so we just started our campus training when COVID kind of some of them moved into the middle of the summer, but we're getting back on the wagon of getting all the campus teams trained. Okay. So that was presentation two. Any questions over any of that?
So
just the legislative update.
Where would we be? How are we versus state average counselors?
The question I want to bring is how are we versus the state average? I don't have an exact answer, but I know we are about 1 to 300 secondary level. We have one counselor on the school schools, and so those are the two high. And so depending on how many
on that same note, can I ask, so it says 1 to 350, but it seems to me the secondary is a heck of a lot higher workload.
There is. I can't say there's a higher, it's a different workload. It's different. It's different. Done well at the elementary level, it's extremely overwhelming time consuming. I mean, we have seen a complete regression of social skills at the elementary level. The kids have been out since March. You know, if they don't have structure at home, they come back. So a lot of what those counselors do at the elementary level is behavior school. Social skill training, behavior school. Just trying to put a band-aid to keep them in class. And let's move forward and figure out how to get them back to more structure.
It's interesting to me, so much of our curriculum forgot the whole, that whole piece of it. Not our curriculum, what the state is mandating, that we continue to push higher skill levels down.
It's just down, 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 down.
Yeah, and now they recognize we need more counselors. Maybe if you'd back off of trying to teach some of these skills to a first grader, we might not need.
I'm there with you. Okay, so now we're going to talk about social emotional learning, strategic direction, and where all of this wraps together and comes together into one thing. Okay, so making that turn. Goal 5. This is the big one. Establish a culture that promotes social and emotional learning. That is a big goal. You know, I remember when we were working on that goal, it started with just addressing social-emotional learning, like we need to make sure that's a part of our plan. But it just kept growing, it kept growing. It was based on the survey that Tammy went around, and you and Laura met with everyone, and we, you know, what's important to us as a district, and evolved from more than social-emotional learning to we want social-emotional learning to care for us, and we want to grow. So how do we do that? And so first of all, we have to figure out what is that? What does that look like? Because that's a very, very big goal. We have all of these things in place. We have culture, safety, mental health, rewards, recognition, capturing kids' heart is a huge part of it, panorama, counseling. There are so many pieces that we can get into what this social emotional goal is. So a culture that allows children and adults, that includes all of us in this room, because you know we struggle too. How do we, in times of crisis, manage our emotions, achieve our goals, feel and express empathy for others, establish and maintain positive, trusting relationships, feel physically and psychologically safe, and take risks and not feel bad? Because That's what we want. That's what we want for all of our kids. That's what we want for our teachers. We want them safe so that they'll take the risk to teach and they'll take the risk to learn. So social emotional learning is a little separate from that. It is learning the skills to be able to do those things. And so that's where it's differentiated. So we want a culture where those things happen, but we have to teach people how to do those things to create a culture. So that's social emotional learning. Now, CASEL has been around for 25 years and they are the cornerstone for social emotional learning. Another thing that my daughter did was put a link in the CASEL 25 year button. So if you click on that button, it will take you to CASEL and you can see. Except it doesn't say that. So, but if you're interested, click there, visit the CASEL website. They've got some amazing resources and research. Almost everything that's come out about social emotional learning relates back to CASEL. And then going forward, that's important because these CASEL indicators for school-wide SEL, we have all of these things going on that we are rocking them. Okay? This is how CASEL defines what should be happening on campuses to show that we have school-wide SEL. Okay? So I'm not going to read them to you, but if you want to go back and reread them and just kind of think about, I mean, just look at youth voice and engagement. How much do we talk about that? I mean, these are all CASEL concepts. And so moving forward, back where I said Panorama was not at hand, Panorama uses CASEL research to support its platform. So it was CASEL. They took all of the supporting indicators, came up with Panorama to measure them. And so when we measure things with Panorama, they're linked back to CASEL research. And so we've got a research-backed tool that will do whatever we need it to do if we can ask the questions the right way. So those are both links if you wanted to check out the CASEL School Guide or visit the Panorama website. Okay, these are the student competencies for SEL. And if you think about where we want to get for a culture of well-being for everyone, we want them to have grit, growth mindset, self-management, social awareness, self-efficacy, learning strategies, classroom effort, be able to take social perspectives, self-efficacy, and be able to regulate their emotions. So those are the student competencies that Panorama measures. Okay? And again, they're through the surveys. The kids answer the surveys. They zip off to Panorama. Panorama does whatever they do with them, and then they send us back the information. So, with that, where does counseling fit? Guidance includes delivery of instruction to strengthen social-emotional skills. So we definitely need counselors doing guidance. And if you think back to the chart earlier on how much guidance counselors should be providing, if you look at that 35 to 45% on the elementary campus, with one person spending 35 to 45% of your time, there's no way they can teach all of those skills. I mean, it's impossible. At the high school level, we're looking at 15 to 20% of their time. There's no way they can hit every kid often enough with guidance to change their behavior. So it's impossible for the counselor to do it all, for SEL to occur, and for us to achieve goal number 5. It's got to be a team effort that's supported across the campus and the district and reinforced with the guidance. So the counselor's role is to be a member of that leadership team that guides the process on the campus. You know, what is it going to look like on the campus? This is my expertise. This is what I'm good at. I can give you some suggestions and I can help you. Developing and managing the shared guidance material, including Panorama and Thrively. Thrively is a separate program that I won't go into tonight unless you have a lot of questions about it. But Panorama is a playbook that also has resources that comes with it on how to support SEL when you identify your competencies. So facilitating professional development for teachers, being able to provide that trauma-informed instruction, providing skill-based small groups, and classroom guidance on a rotational basis, and coaching and modeling for SEL delivery. You know, a lot of teachers are willing to teach it, they just have never done it. So how do we teach teachers how to teach social skills and not lose instruction time and integrate the two together? So those are all the things that the counselor can do. it's like, how do we put it all together? Because that's a hard part. There are a whole lot of pieces hanging up here. We've got the legislative, the training, the student education, the staff education. What do we do to wrap all this together? And click to the next slide. This is the problem. This is our strategic plan moving forward to kind of hit goal number 5 and make sure we are providing all the social emotional learning and support that the kids need. And it starts and it ends, you see, with the green panorama bars. And so beginning with panorama, we need to assess our needs. Where are our kids? You know, in that list of things that we can measure. How do we measure it? That's through panorama. But then when we have the measurements, then we need to tailor what we teach our kids to what our kids need. Not a generic program we're buying from somewhere with somebody telling us what our kids need. We need to know what our kids need. And so once we get our assessment back and that survey is ready, it will go out this week to the campus principals and they will distribute it to the kids. They will do it and have it completed by the end of the semester. It's one survey, every kid will take one. When we come back from Christmas, Panorama will have the results. From there, we form a focus group that is a subcommittee of SHAC, and we identify from that survey where are areas of opportunity, what do we need to focus on to build capacity for the kids. Another amazing thing about Panorama is that has an adult survey. So in January, we're going to release an adult survey to see where our teachers are at the SEL process. And so it'll kind of be a two-fold approach. We've got to find out where our opportunities are with our kids and where our opportunities are with our teachers. But once we get those two things, then we identify the skills we need to work on. We develop lessons for each one of them and a method of delivery. How are we going to get that out? Implementation, direct, was a walking closer, direct instruction, restructured lessons by dedicated classroom time by teachers. And that's, I think, going to be our biggest obstacle. And I talked a little with Tammy about this today. You know, it's got to be in the classroom and it's got to be ingrained in what they do. It's got to be part of what they believe. Dwayne has graciously volunteered to be the pilot of campus. And so she is going to work very closely with me and we are together going to work through these and figure out how does that look. You know, is it delivered through family time, community circles, in the classroom, campus to campus, how does it work? I don't want to just start it across the district and say, here, principals, here's one more thing that we think we have to do. But if Dwayne and I work together and step by step it and have a roadmap, then we should be rolling. Classroom guidance will be delivered by the counselors. Small group instruction will be delivered by the counselors. And then thematic integration, taking these skills and really making them part of who we are and teaching them everything. The reinforcement piece, I don't think it's going to be difficult. So I think a lot of the reinforcement is already there from capturing kids' hearts and the focus that we have on relationships. I think it's just bringing it to the forefront and recognizing that that's what we're doing and calling it. And then at the end, we come in and we evaluate again using Panorama with the same survey to see, did we make strides? And where can we do better? Where are some what's? You know, looking at and just starting that process all over. And just making it, I think, correct. Whether we do it once a year, twice a year, changing it, we're too far.
So, Loida, do you think that the staff we have has the capacity, especially given, and then there was COVID?
And then there was COVID?
Yeah.
I don't know if you could hear a question because I could barely hear, but she said, do you think our staff has capacity for that? And that's why I want to go slow. I think had we rolled this out at the beginning and said, hey, guess what? We're going to do Canvas. And I thought of this great plan with Panorama.
Yeah.
I don't think I would be here anymore. I think they would have done away with me.
Well, I do think
they have the capacity.
But your goal, too, is to try to integrate these things.
Right.
It's not additional.
I want it to be something new.
Yeah.
I want it to be something we support, something we believe in. And I want it to go at a manageable pace so that we can do it well, do it right, and do it for the long term.
And if we can't
do all of this year, because that's a pretty lofty goal. I mean, this may be over the next 3 years. This may be over the next 2. But we are moving in this direction. If you'll look at my next slide, Katie, I'll show you how optimistic I am. See, in the spring, COVID will decrease and our schedules will open up.
Yay!
Okay, so if that happens, we're in much better shape. If not, we've still got a baby step.
Yeah.
Okay? So I would like to receive a return to guidance and system support. We've got to collect the information from the adults and student SEL surveys. We've got to form a focus group to present information to SHAC and then report within the plan. So these are just the next steps. Now, they're not going to happen in a week, they're not going to happen in a month, but that's what we're working toward. So we've got to develop a staff training plan for trauma and informed instruction. I've started that already with the first training day being set for January for counselors. So we'll do them first and figure out what does that look like. And again, a lot of it goes back to, but then there was COVID. If we have another outage, if we have, nobody can predict. So, and we also have to figure out how we're going to get student registration done and then remain prepared for them, because that's our biggest variable.
And through House Bill and the legislative pieces, there's no specific timeline on this. It's just a matter of.
There's no specific timeline. It said implemented in the 2021 school year for most of the things. And so, but the state has really given a lot of leeway because everybody's in the same boat. I feel like we are further ahead than any district in because of what we've done over the last 2 years. We've captured kids' hearts with our relationships, with our training, and our potential strategic direction. We focus on what we need to focus on. We are further ahead than most. Questions?
What
kind of wine do you drink, baby? That's, you know.
This is my baby.
All right.
Y'all need a break before this exciting presentation?
Coffee.
Yes. So was your son Alexander family?
Yes, he was.
Did not even know that, but we were looking through. I was like, we got to show this one. That's too cute. Okay, we'll go through this real quick. So we created a dashboard for our COVID cases onto the website. It's just another way for us to build trust in our community. And when letters go out, we're required to send a letter to whatever campus has a case. We send it straight to that parent. So if you were at, unfortunately, if you were at Peach Creek for a while, you didn't know there was anything going on. And then, boom. Peachtree's got all the excitement. So yeah, we started doing that, and these were our bonds. This is, you'll see the numbers later. But we started for August 17th, and every day it's current. We did get requests from some parents, what's going on, you know, what's your total cases, and we did get some requests from agencies, so we thought this is just the best way. Put it up there, and everybody's got that data. So this is how we go through the process every single day. But it may be better if you just go ahead and go to the next one. So every day we look at a spreadsheet that John DeBrock has for students by noon, and every day we look at the spreadsheet that Human Resources has at noon to see if we have any new active cases. And then if we do, we document that in the active on-site student cases and active employee cases. And to get the number for percentage or a positivity rate, we take all our learners and take out our remote learners to get the on-site learner number, and then the employees, our total for the positivity rate. So every day that is updated. Now, if I added an active case, for instance, today, there were two students added to the high school active cases, but I also removed two active ones. So it was a wash, basically, on the active student at the high school, but two of them went over as a total. So does that make sense?
So this is numbers at a given moment in time. It's not cumulative because
The total is cumulative. Your active is, and this data was taken from November 10th, and so you'll notice today, I think our numbers are at 62 or 64. If you went to the dashboard right now, you can see that that number is different on the far right, and the positivity rate changes when people come back or recover, or people are on the side of get a case of an employer or get a case of a student. So that changes. Typically every day we've had a case somewhere, and I wouldn't say every day, but sometimes we've had two letters go out on two different campuses one day, and then 2 days we might not have any letters go out. But every single day that we have a case, we send a letter out in English and Spanish to whatever campus we're at. By 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock is when we send the letter going out. So, and close contact. That's been like the latest information that we've been talking about. We actually had a Google Meet this morning. Dr. Burke asked all the elementary principals to get online, y'all bet. Close contacts is if you have COVID and I'm not wearing a mask and I'm in your classroom, even though you're wearing a mask, I'm considered a close contact and I'm quarantined for 14 days. Not just the 10, the 14, because it's two beyond on either side, I think. Something like that. So it's 14 days. So we've had 6 classrooms since school has begun that has been quarantine because they're the third grade below. So if a student classmate had COVID, all the rest of the class is quarantined because they're under that third grade level and they're not wearing a mask. So that's what they're considered in close contact. Now, of course, you have close contacts at the other campuses, but it's not a whole classroom. It's really more individuals that spend more than the 15 minutes. So when you do have close contacts, those principals call those parents of close contacts. They're not given a letter, they're actually called in advance of a letter. That's why there's that time period between 12 and 4, so principals have the opportunity to call anybody that has been considered close contact. So at 12, we do a cutoff, we create our letters. 12 to 4 is time for our principals to call close contacts if there are any, and then the letter goes out. But we had a meeting today, and the principals were saying, you know, we really don't, at this time, since it's been 6 classrooms from the beginning, and we still are under, the highest point we ever got to was a 2.1%, was at Peach Creek, and that's, you know, the decision to close for 2 days. But our numbers have been, mm-hmm. Have you been in here? Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Anyway, so we're like, hold. So I think that's where we're at right now.
Questions? How do we consider, so, the close contact? Because all the kids are eating in the same classroom.
Are they eating in the same classroom?
Are they eating in the classroom?
When you're eating, you don't have to wear a mask, or when you're third and below, you don't have to wear a mask. But other times, you should be wearing a mask. And fourth and up, should.
Well, we're taking that into consideration.
They're all.
I mean, the fourth graders will be wearing there for 30 minutes eating lunch.
They're spaced out.
Yeah, they're spaced out.
So you can see them look good.
Yeah, I don't think in the older, and I don't think they eat in their classrooms. They only have breakfast. I think they get their breakfast, they go to their classroom. Or the older kids, they've done a good job of rotating them in and out so they have lots of space. Or in here, they eat. I think they, well, you can see the exits where they have the space out for that.
So I think all things considered, we've been pretty fortunate in the cases that we expected. The meeting today, you know, we just talked about continuing to monitor. We're going to send out a letter, and I'll let you guys review it when we send it out on Thursday. Just strongly recommending again that everyone wear masks and can communicate to our parents the definition of close contact. Because there's two sides, right? It's like a mask. Hopefully, we'll prevent the spread. It also will prevent us from having to close down classrooms if we decide to do that, which then in turn saves people from having to take off work and things like that. So
well, that just goes right back to what we did, talking about kids that were dressed, so significantly.
Yeah. But I mean, it's also
quarantining them for 14 days, and not that we do, but, you know, we have to do this.
And for missing school, we're not engaged.
Yes, just I mean, it has this terrible snowball.
We're going to strongly recommend that you do it, monitor for the next 2 or 3 weeks, and then if the cases continue to go up, we also feel like there may be some issues with
students. Plus, maybe we've been. I'll show up.
Yeah, tell us.
Can you walk us through the process if we had quarantine a whole classroom, getting the kids back to school? How does it work from classes been in close contact at quarantine, and what's the status of that?
I can tell you what I know. Melissa Coates is now calling. Right, so, for instance, I've been on quarantine. There's a date next to my name that says I'm a close contact. This is the date that I am determined as a close contact, and this is the date that I can return. On the date that I return, I have not had symptoms or exhibiting system, I can return, right? So during the call, the parent is called to say your child has been close contact, be sure that you monitor them for symptoms. If they develop any symptoms, you need to get them tested prior to them coming back. They have to be fever-free.
Are they required to be tested prior to coming back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only
so.
If
they're close contact.
Right. And then, so when I look at the Excel spreadsheet, even though it says that date, that student may not have returned, and they may not have been recovered, and they may just be sick. So Melissa has been calling them and saying, hey, today your child was supposed to be back. Are they sick? Are they not feeling well? Or what's going on? So she's been taking the lead on the student's return. We have had some students that were false positives. They were tested, and the parent was like, this child is not sick. He does not have COVID. I'm going to test him again. Went and tested him again with false positive. The child is allowed to return within 2 days. Right. So,
what about a kid that is positive that doesn't have symptoms?
They have to be the full 10 days.
How would you know?
If they tested positive.
Unless they had a second test.
They tested positive.
We did have a student who was going to have some selective surgery, right, and had to have the COVID test. Was asymptomatic, was tested positive, had to stay out for the quarantine or the time period, and then tested again to be able to come back.
If you're saying what do we do to account for those parents that maybe not take them to be tested, how do we monitor that?
Yeah, so I only know how it works in. My office, if you're in close contact, require you to get a test, and you get so many days after the test, because there's no way to tell.
That's right, because somebody without symptoms can be
quick. You should just come right back and just play around with them when you're starting to learn. But I get it.
You're talking about when it's negative. Like, so you get a test, it's negative,
you said they test positive, and then they've completed their 14 days.
Oh, you're talking, because I was like, if it's just a couple of days, then they can still be in quarantine. Okay.
We don't require them to get tested.
I got you.
There's been all kinds of scenarios that I never would do or would exist in. You'd have families that were quarantined, and then the father, everybody had to be tested for the father to go back to work, and when they did that test, one of the kids got tested. So everybody's back in quarantine again. So it's been, you should see the notes on the spreadsheet. So it's been interesting. But for the most part, I think the 62 for September, October, November, December, 4 months, 62 out of 4,800 people, I think that our staff and our students, our custodians, everybody really should be committed that they're doing a really good job, because that's a big number, you know, when you're thinking about it.
The challenge is just everybody's getting mask fatigue and make sure you wash your hands and make sure there's a lot. Thank you. Good job.
Next up, action items. Certificate of election, oaths of office, and statement of officer.
I because we had to cancel the election, I asked the Attorney General's office, if we needed to do a statement of officer and file it. We do not have to file it, but we have to have it on. That's why that's part of this. And of course, we have to do the oath of office as well. And the state of it.
I make a motion to accept the certificates of election oaths of office.
Statements.
Statements of officers for board trustees, positions 1, 2, and 3.
I'll second.
Okay.
Same time?
Yeah. Maybe you just say your position. Okay. And I come to your time. Unless you'd like to do separate. I can do them separate.
It doesn't matter to me. I want to make sure I'm on the same page. Yeah. Or whatever page.
So
I Dan Muirhead, do solemnly swear or the requirement I will faithfully execute the duties but shift me there to you.
Okay. Hold up.
Yeah.
Still do separate.
We repeat it.
Right.
Come on.
It's okay. So I,
very well.
I Dan Muirhead,
do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the duties of the office.
I will faithfully execute the duties of the office.
Of Board of Trustees.
Board of Trustees, position 2.
Of the state of Texas.
Of the state of Texas.
And will to the best of my ability preserve, protect, and defend.
And will to the best of my ability preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution and laws of the United States.
The Constitution and laws of the United States.
And of this state, so help me God.
And of this state, so help me God. You want us to hold our hands? You want us together?
You know what?
Which way? Where are we going?
You get over there and you take your mask down. I'll actually.
Put a green screen. Are we passing on reorganization for tonight?
No. I don't think so.
Yeah, I would think. Adam, are we passing on the reorganization of the board for this evening?
That's a great idea.
So we can put that on the agenda for next meeting. The reorganization, until Suzanne's here, if we can just not do that this evening. I'm sorry? For the next meeting. The next meeting?
Can we make that meeting work? I know we have a part time
agenda reviews. Oh, wait, the agenda review? The next, I would think it would be the next.
We have an agenda review scheduled for the Monday when we get back from Thanksgiving, so we could have a workshop that night to reward.
Okay.
If y'all want to, or if you want to do it at the regular meeting, that's fine. Whatever you want to do. Y'all just let me know.
That Monday work?
Yeah, it's fine.
You can add it anyway, right?
I typically am, but I mean, I just, the agenda review, if we are always putting agenda items on there, then it's really not a, then it's really not a optional meeting. It becomes more, you know, we're having 2 meetings a month. That's my thing. I'm fine with it. I'm perfectly fine with it.
I do solemnly swear that we will not have any action.
Yes. Yeah. Every time you put an action item on there, now it's a required meeting, really. You know, because your constituents voted for you to attend that.
I'm going to
motion
that we postpone 2, 3, and 4 to the 11:30 agenda meeting.
I don't think you need a motion. You don't need a motion. We're just going to not do it tonight. Well, the table will leave. You come back to it tonight. We're not taking any action on that item tonight.
Okay.
Does it?
Yep.
Well, then go for it. You know. Okay, I'm sorry. I just heard.
So there was a motion, my motion, and Jason's second.
Okay. Can you, we've got it on the recording.
Page 13, third ordinance.
No, no, no. I don't know what the motion was now.
Motion to postpone B2, 3, and 4.
Thank you.
Adam and Jason. Okay, thank you.
Proclamation regarding charter schools.
Yes, so I'm going to bring a proclamation forward regarding charter schools, specifically equitable issues surrounding that, and so we can take that work, take the work to find a good proclamation out there. So this is what we can do going forward.
I do have. Yeah. I'm struggling here because what's preventing us from having our own charter? I guess, so I raise the question because, well.
Gosh, I mean, what? Why have we always been against them? Right?
What
I mean,
I'm
so
is,
all the things that you, that we've always been against, you know, about your teaching and your equitable services, et cetera, all the things that we've always discussed, wouldn't that be now, hey, we're going to promote that?
Mechanisms exist for us to pursue the creation of a charter school in some of the district and some of the requirements. And we looked at this. I remember sitting around, you were like, did we review that? Who was in that? Well, we reviewed the you were there last year. The requirements.
Brian's like, but then COVID happened.
Okay, so it must be me and Tammy and Troy. So, I mean, the mechanism's there. I just personally agree with how they're regulated and monitored by the state. That's something that we're interested in.
Well, for me, it's always been a matter of fairness that we're on equal playing field, right?
Right? That's what kind of gist of this is.
But we have the option to get there.
We do.
But we choose not to exercise an option.
Correct. Under the current structure, I would not prefer to do that. More wishes for us to bring some options. It's more to me about virtual learning academies and some of the pop-ups that are happening. And then the commission were asked by a branch of authority to approve charter schools that are funded inequitable and public schools. So I think the playing field is not, but we could pursue that.
And that's kind of like when we started talking about, okay, we're going to force kids to come back. That's why I asked the question, well, is it a campus thing? Is it a district thing? Because technically, and I guess I wanted the conversation more than anything so that the board's aware, we could pursue a charter. If we wanted to have an online, fully funded
right.
school,
yes.
We could open a charter school that's fully funded. We have that option. But, and I guess that's where I just wanted us all to be aware of that if we don't like the rules that we currently have to play by, there's an option, and I somewhat agree with you, because it's almost a nuclear option, right? I mean, it's a big bomb to take on. But we have the option to jump out of this system and into another system where we have basically get to write most of the rules ourselves within the framework that the state has laid out. Anyway, I mean,
yeah, I know we're going to have some intense legislative efforts to
well, and that's what has me, and that's what has me thinking. I mean, if I'm a legislator and you come to me and say, "Hey, I don't like the rules," I'm going to say, "Well, you have the option to change the rules." I don't mean to get too excited about this.
No,
but I don't know that most legislators are that aware either. But, and quite frankly, it's not sustainable. Right? If everybody opened a charter, the state's not going to have enough money to fund them all.
Right.
Well,
we can table this. That's interesting.
I just wanted everybody to kind of just realize that there are other options out there if we chose to go down that road. And I'm not necessarily saying we should. I'm not. But before we passed the TRE, I mean, board members told me, "Oh, that's unbelievable. There can't be that much money in the state. You know, that's just by changing the way we tax, you know, we're going to get an extra $2 million a year." Yeah, it was that simple. And right now, what I see with the charters and like Longview ISD, I mean, I don't know that I like it, but they have realized how to get more money from the state through the charter process. And they're cashing out. Did they either cash out or did they sell out? I don't know. That's the, anyway.
So we can debate.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm all for, you know, we're all advocates here for public education, so. But to me, I'll make the motion to defer the proclamation regarding charter school as presented.
All in favor?
I'm sorry, was there a second?
Councilman Allen.
Oh, Allen. Okay, sorry, I didn't hear you, Allen. I was actually going to abstain.
I'm torn.
I kind of want more information.
Do our board operating procedures allow us to approve one bid?
But it had to be three.
Well, that's the only bid. Sent out RFPs and only had one respondent.
What does the board operating procedures say?
The board operating procedures, we have more than one bid. When you only have one bid, only one response.
Go back to bid, I mean, right? I mean,
guarantee you getting any more responses the second time around.
make some phone calls, I guess.
Yeah, the only problem that I know, even on the bid process here, is once you bid on it once, then I'll bid on it again, but the number's going to be higher because somebody wants to bid. So I do think in that case, we'll go out and bid and probably get a higher price.
But if we have a procedure that says you have to have two bids or three bids,
but you do have easy access to board operating procedures.
I don't have the procedure in front of me, so I can't quote.
Katie, do you have easy access to the board operating procedures?
Push it farther down the agenda while we look.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm fine with it if it's
quicker. We have a process that says that's go with it if you only get one bid.
Yeah, I mean, not
or a process that says something else.
I'm in agreement.
Because I remember us talking about it. Was that
the price retrofitted and everything?
The $45 was for the car and the lights installed. Yeah, enough to drive out. So I don't have to do anything else to it. It's got radio, siren, and everything. One other thing too, though, is we personally don't see vehicle purchases coming to the board.
We have to address that in the board operating.
Well, because we
have a $50,000 threshold.
Yeah, we have a
$50,000 thing.
But
yeah,
that's board operating procedure. So
yeah,
which that was just changed
2 years ago.
Yeah, because it used to be less than that.
$25,000 to $50,000.
Yeah, but why? But, I mean, if you trust up to the $50,000, whether it's a vehicle or not, then
I can tell you one reason I liked before. Like, there were times when we spent $500 more, but we used a local dealership.
Yeah, true.
Now, is that are we wasting $500 because that's the same people that show up to buy animals? It's the same people that put their sign out front. I mean, So there's an argument to be made each way. But.
And we, to be honest, this is the first time we went outside of the local to get the vehicle. It was because of the fact that it's equipped.
Yeah, because it's ready to go from the dealership, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. In the past, I'll just be honest, I had to wonder about how our stuff was getting equipped and by whom, just because of the personal relationships and the people involved. Didn't have to worry about that this time.
But even then, we got a local guy that does them.
I looked at Cap Fleet is on Fulton. I think Dana Safety Supply is down on southeast side of town. And the other one I looked at was in Argyle, Texas. I mean, I didn't want to go to Argyle myself because if something is wrong with the lights, so I've got to get it back to Argyle. So I compared basically the two Houston bids. I mean, we're within $100, $200, depending on whether they put Wheeling lights, Federal Signal. There's several different light packages. And we can buy a vehicle local, but then basically we have to purchase it, and then we take it over to some upfitter to pay them basically $9,000 or $10,000 to upfit it. Whereas, if I buy the whole package, they work the deal, they get it from Caldwell, I don't have to get it down here to them. When I pick it up, they hand me the title.
That does clarify, I think. That clarifies a lot. I mean, it's different than the process we've usually seen. That's why, I mean, so.
Correct.
Yeah.
We got a new guy.
I'll second. I'm sorry. Yes, it did, and I apologize. I know you made a motion and somebody seconded it. I got that. But are we saying that we are within our that's not our updated.
No. I would prefer. I mean, I'm not. It's not that I'm opposed to the purchase, but if we're going to have a board operating procedure and follow it,
there. That's it right there. That's the newer one.
But I can't find it in there. What would it be?
What's his name? I wrote the fucking thing. Maybe just type in bid. Do a search for bid.
CH Local, what typically describes it, doesn't mention anything specifically about the number of bids.
Because if you had one show up or you had 50 show up.
I think when what's his name rewrote all that, it never went. Okay, all right, so. The motion was made by Barry and seconded by Alan. Okay. All right. And I never even raised my hand, so did you? Would you please?
I absolutely would. All those in favor?
Okay.
6-0.
Thank you.
Good item B. Right.
We changed that over time. I don't know.
Yeah, it used to read differently for sure.
I don't know.
I figured that they're on the phone and you see the general on there. But again, my point today is we're going to know that the bid is under 4.
Well, I'll share more information.
It's going to be 130 just like 4. It's, person that already bids going to raise the price. That's done a fair way to get anymore. I'm just saying this. If I had to rebid,
really? I would think you would lower your prices because there's a question on the table.
I can tell you, most schools that send out construction, when they rebid, it just comes down.
Yeah, I would think that there would be more competitive. But.
I can tell you, we spent $7,000 for a fiber network that people won't even charge for.
Yeah, you can see all the great things still happening.
But two
you,
people
do this. I think we're just thankful to be here in November. Like, I think when we look back at this, there's real doubt that we get here, and there's concern that we have to close down schools. But, I think the Odette's presentation, the surveys that we've done, even though it's a stressful time, I think our teachers have responded, our staff has responded. Del Mar, I think, was awesome. I mean, getting the dedicated map, having the CTE department, his building map is fantastic. A great tribute to not only Del, but to the programs and all public schools that we support. So I'm just proud of our people, and I think we're all ready for Thanksgiving. That's my report.
All right. Board of Trustees will now go into a closed session. This closed session will be held for purposes authorized by the Texas Open Meetings Act, Texas Government Code 6551.074 for the matter. So, any matter submitted by the act of the closed meeting, any action for which to take part in the discussion, closed session will take place after the board reconvenes in the open.
9:25.
It's a police car. So basically, it doesn't have cars. It's a most dealerships probably don't.